Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 150 with the title, From Toxins to Transformation. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Christian Elliott. Christian is a certified personal trainer, nutritionist, life coach, and founder of Healing United, who are dedicated to empowering people to reclaim their health through personalized, holistic detox programs. When I asked Christian to describe his superpower, he said it is simplifying complex health concepts into actionable, transformative solutions. Hello, Christian. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello to you, and thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Am I right in thinking you're based in Florida?
That is correct, yes. I live in the Sunshine State and love it here.
Wow. You've got the weather, we've got the rain, we've got the cold. So, yeah, quite envious. Sun.
Yeah, this time of year, a lot of people are.
Yes, I remember holidaying there with my family back in the early 2000s. Yeah, we had a great time. Did the Orlando experience. I did a bit of work out there in the Miami area back in the 90s. So yeah, I've been to Florida, but it's been a long while, 20 odd years since I've been there.
No, it's a great place. And fewer of us are deficient in vitamin D here, and there's some upside to that. We got some of the nicest beaches in the world.
Yeah, the Keys, and it's... And you got, was it crocodiles or alligators?
We get alligators. We don't get crocodiles, alligators. Thankfully. Yeah.
I mean, I remember going to Gator World and seeing the, I suppose that's a clue, Gator World, yeah.
Yeah, alligator. They're less intrusive or threatening than maybe the stereotype, but they are here.
Yeah. I remember driving around the suburbs and there were signs saying, beware of the crocodiles, because they were obviously the streams down the side of the road and things. So, you think, oh, wow.
Don't go wandering off into natural water elements without your eyes wide open.
Yeah, we did one of those skimmers, the boats with the big fan on the back. We skimmed across the water and airboat, that's it, yeah. And that was quite good fun.
Yeah.
So, Christian, your passion for holistic health, I've been in the show notes, it's clear. What inspired you to break away from the more conventional healthcare and create a personalized approach to true wellness, if you like?
Yeah, I guess as much because conventional was just failing me. I've been to half a dozen different doctors trying to get well, and nothing worked. And I found a chiropractor. I wasn't even looking for one, just happened to be my wife's bridesmaid went for carpal tunnel syndrome. And I was like, well, shoot, my shoulder condition that was one of the main drivers of trying to heal. I'm like, the shoulder's closer to the spine than the wrist. That's about the extent of what I knew about chiropractic. So I thought, well, shoot, then maybe they can help me. So I went there and he blew my mind. He turned my paradigm of health upside down. He taught me about what I've come to call the food industrial complex or the medical industrial complex, this big high-level system that has really profit ahead of people and that is really interested in the medical world and treating symptoms rather than getting to root causes. And so I had to get outside that to find how to heal. And sure enough, I healed well. And I, in some ways, have the health that a lot of people envy today because I just became a very concentrated student for about 2 years trying to understand what I thought, like, why in the world is my healing journey not the normal way we do things? And so I had to peel the layers of that onion to find out why isn't this how we approach sickness? And there's just some, you know, there's business and ugly realities behind why that the systems are the way they are. And so I became a kid in a candy store trying to figure out what other things like this do I not know about? How many other profound ways to heal are there that are either just poo-pooed or suppressed or I'm just ignorant of? And so I became a student of what we call the alternative world. I think that's also a label that conventional loves to give us. But anything that's outside of treat symptoms or cut, burn, poison is really, there's so many ways to help the body heal. And what I found is there's merit to a lot of it. And it can heal in profound ways that medications and surgeries and radiation does not. And once I studied that at breadth and I couldn't go back. I couldn't pretend I didn't see what I saw. And so we ended up with brick and mortar locations for 9 years. We aggregated a whole bunch of different wellness disciplines, alternative modalities in one place. And I got to watch how a holistic healing approach could really transform someone's health in short order or with an appropriate degree of patience and discipline in dramatic fashion to where they're literally a transformed person. And that just became, I want to do what I can to leave a mark on this world that says there's a better model for healthcare. I want to flip the current one on its head and say, let's map out a better way. We don't have to fight the system as much as just show a better model. And so that's really been my work the last 20 years is doing my part to demonstrate that. And because I've seen so many things, I can often simplify and spare people a lot of wrong turns or help them see through marketing gimmicks and shiny objects and options that are really just majoring in minors and aren't getting to the heart of the problem.
Is it fair to say that most of us are kind of killing ourselves with what we're eating, what we're consuming, our body mass, our lack of exercise, our health, our food choices? This is contributing factors to many of the problems we experience in society today, isn't it?
Some of it is self-inflicted and a lot of it is not. It's externally imposed. And one of the most eye-opening experiences I had in my journey, so in 2006, I read a book called The 100-Year Lie. So he's retracing from 1906 to 2000. So he starts with the Pure Food and Drug Act, which basically birthed the FDA and this idea that we would have pure foods and pure drugs. And the slogan, better living through chemistry, kind of came into vogue as we were going to use chemistry and reductionist thinking and a pill for every ill to solve all of our problems, and chemistry would make everything better. And what we also birthed was chemicals for warfare. And we switched after World War II to chemicals for warfare for our food system and went to war against microbes and bugs and any sort of thing that was inconvenient in a healthy food system. We went to war against those so-called inconveniences. And in so doing, we created in the last, you know, he traces in the book, over 80,000 synthetic chemicals, basically new to nature molecules that our bodies were never designed to work with. They're just corrosive or they interact in synergistic ways that we can't account for. And when you realize that happened with medicine, and it's this mindset that we're going to treat sickness with whatever symptom you have, there's a pill for that. Rather than saying, where did the symptom come from? We're just in the really monopolistic healthcare system was built on that foundation of standardization and symptom management. You know, it sounds maybe somewhat cynical to say, but kind of the model or the motto of conventional healthcare is a patient that's cured is a customer lost. And so it's meant to keep them on a treadmill of services, if you will, of really, it's funny to think about it, but the word pharmaceutical actually comes from the word pharmakia, which means witchcraft or sorcery. It's this idea of like using potions to tinker with our biology rather than saying we're using a chemical solution to treat a chemical problem, which doesn't really make much sense. We can't biochemical whack-a-mole our way out of being poisoned. And if you'll look at the U.S. is some of the worst health statistics in the world. We are free-falling in our health here, and such to the point that, you know, in 1930s, about 7.5% of the population had a chronic health condition. Today, 6 out of 10 people have at least one. So from 7.5% to 60% in a matter of decades, one of the major things we have to swallow in is that we are poisoning ourselves, to your point, with our foods and with our medicines and with the stuff in the air and the jet fuel, the exhaust that covers the earth and the smog in our cities and the fluoride in our water and on and on. And if we can't get our head around the source of this problem and we're going to play symptom whack-a-mole, if we can't think outside the periodic table in order to better our health, then we are going to stay stuck in this loop and we do have to get out of it. And that's really what I'm somewhat of a locust eating prophet in the wilderness trying to talk about that problem really since I became aware of it. And so here we are full circle to 20 years later, almost 19 years since I read that book. And now it's not so taboo to talk about fluoride and vaccines and chemical toxins in our food and plastics and heavy metals and such in a way that it used to be. And now we can have much more honest conversations about where this is going. And the beautiful, you know, the title you came up with here, the beautiful simplicity is it doesn't have to be complicated to get, well, we have to get toxins out. Then we have to nourish the body. So we purify it and nourish it. And it can be that simple when you break it down.
There are obviously times where I use the word conventional. I mean, by using that word, we're making it sound like that's the best one, conventional.
Right.
Yeah, we've got to challenge the biases. You know, you've talked about alternative, we've got conventional. Even the language of that implies that one is better than the other, if you
correct.
Like.
Correct. Yes,
so,
it does.
But sometimes the conventional pharma, medicines, drugs, vaccines, have a place. They work for a lot of people. And there's times where they don't work. And we can clearly see examples where people have almost exhausted every conventional route. And then the alternative medicine, the alternative treatments, a remarkable way of stepping in at that point.
They do. Well, and I'll even back it up one frame just to where you started with the what we have in Western societies, and in particular the U.S., is we have linguistic handcuffs. The so-called conventional model has claimed for itself the exclusive rights to use words like cure, treat, prevent, mitigate, or ameliorate. And everything so-called alternative is not allowed to use those terms. So I literally cannot say to you that water prevents dehydration or could cure dehydration because I'm now making a drug claim about a natural product and that's a no-no. And so the language police and the linguistic handcuffs that the so-called alternative world is in, is that was also chosen. They chose to claim we are conventional, we have science, and be careful, anything else. If you don't follow what we do, you're off the reservation and this is dangerous. And that was intentional to seep into the culture, the mindset, the taking ownership for your health or exploring things outside of literally cut, burn, poison. It sounds barbaric to say, but that is the model of healthcare that is called conventional. Poison your body into submission. If it's not working, cut parts out. And if you got something significant, we can radiate you. We can burn you and burn that part of your body in order to help it heal. And the basic logic of that doesn't handle a stress test very well. So why is that conventional? And when you can recognize that, oh, that's the model, and you rewind the history of it to figure out how it was set up and who set it up and why and how they wove into legislating themselves into the title of conventional and corralling the medical community into this licensure standard of care and who was on the in club and who's out, that system was set up to control things. So us in the alternative world, we have to figure out how to say, well, this helps the body heal. And it doesn't cure, treat, or prevent anything, but it can help empower different systems of your body to function more optimally. And in truth, that's actually what we're doing. We're not treating or curing or preventing anything. Guess what does that? The body does that. The body is what heals itself. The intervention doesn't. And so then it becomes, to your point, what things, what interventions, what modalities, what things can I swallow, assist the body in functioning more optimally? And you can also ask the question, what keeps the body from optimally functioning? What keeps the body from being able to heal? Why do we have these kind of situations in the first place, because they're typically a product of very prosperous societies where we don't have to connect with the land anymore. We don't know where our food comes from, and we're detached from intuition. Then we've outsourced our health to people who have the title expert. And as if because we don't have education in pharmacology, therefore we are not qualified to manage our own health. And so there's this pedestal we put doctors on as if they have the answer. And in any discipline, doesn't matter whether conventional or alternative, they have a sliver of what health really is in their specialty. I've come to call specialists partialists now, because I think it's more accurate to what they know, the tiny part of the problem. And when you can break that spell and think holistically, gosh, it's so much easier to find your path to healing. There's a learning curve to it, but sure enough, it works. And that's really the work I've been about for a long time now.
As a patient myself, put myself in the patient's shoes, I expect the medical professionals, pharmaceutical producers, chemists, whoever they are, to have give me certainty. I want to know that I can be cured. That's what I want, don't I?
Sure.
And that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the Holy Grail. I want immortality. I want invincibility. I want to know if it hurts, you can stop it. If I've got a tumor, if I've got this, I've got that going on, I want to know that what you're going to do for me is reassure me that I will get better if I can. And I think what you're saying is the healthcare industry have the monopoly on the phraseology to give me that assurance. And we've got risk management at play here. We've got who wants to take the risk of you not getting better? Am I insured? Am I covered? Are you going to sue me? There's all these kind of things going on, isn't there?
Yeah, the whole model is fear-based, once you think about it. If you don't know enough, so you have to trust us, there are invisible things that might infect you, and you need to be worried about that. And if you don't do the quote-unquote conventional thing, now you're even at more risk. And what lacks in this entire conversation is informed consent. They don't tell you the risks of their treatments. When was the last time somebody laid out for you, so here are the side effects of this medication? Here are the processes that your body runs that it will interrupt. Here's where it's going to throw a monkey wrench in, like for statins as an easy example. The monkey wrench of this HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor, which means basically that's a fancy way of saying there's a particular enzyme that this interrupts when your body's synthesizing cholesterol. And as a side effect of that, your body also can't synthesize CoQ10 anymore. So that can lead to heart failure and several different diseases of the heart. Never mind, we're trying to prevent heart disease with this medication, but we're actually creating a different kind of problem that can lead to heart disease and a weakened immune system and gingivitis and other things. And so what doctor ever lays that out for you when you go to get something to lower your cholesterol? Or how about the question, why is the body making so much cholesterol in the first place? Because it needs it as a raw material to rebuild a healthy cell. So now I'm shooting the messenger and I'm telling the body to stop doing this because there's some artificial test that says your cholesterol needs to be in this particular range or you're at risk of clogged arteries and you're going to keel over at any second. We're back to fear now. And absence of informed consent, it's an oversimplified narrative that doesn't respect the biological processes our body has to run in order to build and sustain health. And because they have the ability to, quote unquote, prevent that, never mind, it's kind of the opposite. Another easy example is the proton pump inhibitors for acid reflux, they turn off your body's stomach acid. Well, think about that for a second. What do you need stomach acid for? To digest your food. Now, how do you break down your food without acid? How do you get rock minerals out of your food without acid? You don't. And so if you don't get it out of there, where does your body have to find it? In your bones. One of the side effects of proton pump inhibitors is hip fractures. Why is it a hip? Because it's the most load-bearing joint of your body. It's the one that your body pulls minerals from it, and eventually that bone cracks because it was deficient in minerals because it couldn't get it out of your food. But the system doesn't tell you that when it's just promoting this one idea, and it's on us to realize how the system functions and find the people who can teach us what our options are in a way that lays it out where you go, okay, I feel informed. And what, to your point, I want to know that I'm going to be cured. I want to know you can make the pain go away. I want to know you can cut the tumor out. Well, yes, with the right painkiller, you can flip a switch that tells your body, stop communicating that message to me. Make it go away so I can't feel it. Doesn't mean you did anything to get at the source of it. And now you've interrupted another physiological process and shifted your body into figuring out some other way to communicate with you that there's still a problem here. That's called side effects. And then they just give you a medication for the side effect and then another medication for the side effect. And well, I had one client on 13 medications. I guarantee you there's no doctor who has any clue what 13 medications are doing synergistically in one body. Like, they don't know and they can't tell you because now it's you're in the polypharmaceutical diagnosis. There's no study anywhere of more than two drugs in one body at the same time. None. Because it's too complex to study the side effects of that. There's some that you can tell these two drugs don't interact well together. And so there's some one-to-one. But three or more, clueless. This guy's on 13. And that's just a shame that his doctors never gave him the informed consent to see where this goes. If we give you another one and another one and another one and another one, that's where people end up. And without that information, how are you supposed to make an educated decision? You're not. You're supposed to blindly trust.
Yeah. And you've raised an interesting question that's going through my head right now. Is it easy to get onto these medications, these drugs? It's not so easy to come off of them. So listen to your speak there. I take omeprazole, which is a proton pump inhibitor.
Is it?
For quite strong acid reflux, which is causing me esophageal spasms and things.
Oh, wow.
I'm on statins, which apparently are good for my heart, but also...
I did not know this, by the way.
To avoid also chronic CKD, chronic kidney disease.
Yeah.
I'm also on, what else am I on? I'm on two sorts of blood pressure medication. They operate differently. One is called Ramipril, and the other one called is some really long name beginning with L, I can't pronounce. One of them isn't good enough. And at what point can I go back to my GP, my doctor, and say, hang on a minute, I've been on these now for years and years and years. Do I still need to stay on them? And their basic response is, well, if they're working, they're working. Just keep doing them. And I want to know, can I get off this? You know, do I have to take all these medications? Because I have to declare these on my health insurance and I have to declare them on my travel insurance. And they're loading me because I'm on this medication. Do I still have potential CKD, kidney disease? I don't think I do, but I'm on this stuff now forever. So yeah, it's really interesting that we get on them. How do we get off them?
Yeah, but that model isn't even interested in asking that question. Doctors aren't trained in deprescribing. They're just trained in prescribing and, add another one. Oh, that the side effects of that are not so great. Let's try a different version of the same toxin. Ugh. And if I was in your shoes, what I would do is just go back and say, what would it take for me to wean off of this? Or here's the fun experiment. Can you tell me why I have, let's say, acid reflux or high cholesterol in the first place? Ask that question. And what you're going to find, you probably get one of five answers. It's genetics, it's stress, it's aging, it's I don't know, or it's all in your head. You're probably just making up that, and you should probably talk to somebody. Because you need to see a shrink now. That's the breadth of the best answers 95%+ of medical doctors are going to give you because that's how they're trained to think. And they're wooed and groomed in this idea that they are the authority and there is no higher, better option. And they use the term idiopathic, which has funny root, idiot. They have this idea that we don't know what the cause of this situation is. That's what the definition of idiopathic is, unknown origin. So you have a disease of unknown origin, which is, to me, is a cop-out. It's the lazy answer to why did this start in the first place? And if we're not entertaining that question, what are we doing? How are we helping someone get well? We're not. We're assuming that it's because a medical doctor often will tell you it's incurable. And what they're really saying is, I don't know how it could be curable. That doesn't mean it isn't. I have so many disease conditions I've helped people reverse. Not because I was treating or prescribing anything. I was just teaching them how to live a healthy lifestyle. And sure enough, the body figured it out. I just helped remove the burden and empower better function. And in many ways, that's what healthcare should be. But it's not how the system thinks. You're just a chemistry equation or a lab test, not a holistic person with a lot of moving parts in your life and identifiable sources of problem. You're just 10 minutes of half listening in a pill. Come back and see me in 6 months or 12 months and we'll do another test. Well, that the test is what was happening in that moment. What about the rest of my life? What about, doctor, what's going on inside myself or inside my interstitial fluid? There's no test for that. There's no test for what's going on in your head. There's a questionnaire, a symptom like amorphous, like you kind of have some of these. So let's just throw some darts in the dark and use this medication for your head. There's no lab test for that. How do you even know what you're dealing with? And I can tell you, if you start asking those questions, the doctors won't appreciate it. Or some, you'll find the rare unicorn who's like humbled. And I had one client on proton pump inhibitors and I laid out for her the nutrients robbed, the side effects and the eventual hip fracture that she was looking at. She went back to her doctor with that evidence and showed it to him. And he said, you know what? You're right. We're going to have to get you off of this. But it took the patient pointing that out to the medical professional and kind of cornering them in the end state of where that goes before the doctor was, in that case, humble enough to say, yeah, we have to maybe get at the root of this. And this as a long-term solution is going to lead to other problems. Where was that informed consent at the beginning of prescribing that? There wasn't any. So
yeah.
Anyway.
One of the BP meds I'm on actually has a proven side effect of causing chronic kidney disease or early stage. It has an effect on the kidney, so you can't overtake. I think it's Ramipril is the one I'm on, whatever that the generic name is. So I know that I'm taking the statins because the Ramipril has effectively impacted my kidneys. I've got to be careful that. And I've lost a lot of weight recently. I've lost over 6 stone in the last couple of years, stopped drinking a couple of years ago. So I'm actually wanting to get a pathway off of some of this stuff. Hopefully my blood pressure will normalize. Now I'm living more health, less body mass, less no alcohol. So I'm hoping that I can wean myself off. But how do I wean myself off a BP med without going cold turkey and saying, because they all have a half-life, don't they? It's not like you stop taking them and then tomorrow you have to wait essentially weeks for them to come out of your system to get the true zero effect of them. And it's Do I have a stroke while I'm playing with it? You know, who knows?
Yeah, there's some medications are easier to discontinue than others. The hardest ones typically are the psych medications. They can mess with, especially the longer you've been on them. So if you can appreciate what's happening in your physiology is if you're accelerating, suppressing, or replacing a normal bodily function, right? You essentially, you're overriding how your body would respond to a particular situation that it's in. It's the hubris of medicine that says your body's not smart enough to fight this battle. We're going to intervene and tell it what to do. That's essentially what the medications you're talking about do. And so if you have for months or years been manipulating or tinkering with your physiology in a particular way and the body can't respond, the parts that are suppressed atrophy. They're not as in shape as they could have been. And rebooting those systems, strengthening them again, letting them know it's now your job to manage this. There's a window of time where they get to basically get back in shape and retake that responsibility and own it and manage it for you. And so, like I said, I would, if I'm in your shoes, I'm looking for a doctor who specializes in deprescribing and understand some of the hiccups you might experience as you come off of those things. And then for yourself, I just brace for impact, like buckle your chin strap and recognize that some of the work you'll do to get off these, there's going to be, as you shift your physiology, maybe some interruptions that are a little unpleasant as your body cleanses these things, as to your point, as the half-life of these medications, as they come out, it's funny to say that, but they're toxins. They need to be purged, and that finding its way to the exit can be a little uncomfortable. And to recognize that it doesn't necessarily mean you're off course if you're having kind of a cleansing response or your body's readjusting to, like think of people who come off of hard narcotics, cocaine, heroin, alcoholics. There's a window of this is just really uncomfortable. And I'm doing this so that my physiology can reset and be in charge of its own processes again. So that's what I'd look for in a situation like yours. And as you are healing, you can appreciate that health is the side effect of a healthy lifestyle. Weight loss is the side effect of a healthy lifestyle. Better sleep, better mood, better energy. Those are all the side effects. It's the compound effect of the right habits carefully chosen. And often that's, you can accelerate that with a good cleanse, and you can accelerate that with nourishment of food and water and hope and movement and so on. And your body retakes the ground that it has lost because you're working with the first principles of health again, not working with a suppression of how your body's responding to something and trying to communicate, this doesn't feel good. I need some help here. And it really, in some ways, it untethers you to the expert spell. It untethers you to the mindset that I need to outsource my health to someone, and you take ownership of it again. And that's, to me, that's the only path to healing that I know of.
There's been some quite well-vocalized horror stories about people who've been persuaded to come off cancer treatment for alternative or holistic medicine, not engaging in chemotherapy, radiography, whatever it may be, some of the strong cancer drugs, to use alternative options. And these people have died. These people have not succeeded with these alternative solutions. I'm not saying they would have done if they stayed on the other ones, but the families believe that they were then given the wrong choice, the wrong option. And there's all this see, this is what crazy alternatives are saying. We need to go back to the science. So how can we reassure people Because there are no FDA trials on a lot of this holistic and alternative medicines, or are there?
Well, there's many facets to answering that. And I guess I'll start with the first one that I think might be lead to the other ones. And that's the idea that we're back to where we said earlier. Fear is part of how we are trained to, like, if you can get someone an anxious moment, they are malleable and they are likely to do whatever you tell them with authority and confidence is the answer. So some of what we can appreciate about the poo-pooing of anything outside of so-called conventional is that that's done with intent. And it's even sometimes, I hate to say it, done with malice. It is done to make sure that we tell the stories the way we want them told to continue to keep the profits and keep people thinking a particular way. And so what they don't tell you is all the stories of people that got killed by the chemo, or that didn't get any better, or that didn't have any quality of life. And that when they don't, in the drug commercials that we get to play here, there's only two countries left in the world where drug advertising is legal, the United States and New Zealand. And the drug ads that we see on our TV, they never show somebody throwing up at the toilet. They never show somebody without their hair and going through all the side effects of the treatments. They show people living on permanent vacation and living their best life. And this just beautiful picture. There's no informed consent. They just use these beautiful images and they just list. You might have nausea, constipation, cramping, insomnia, vomiting, diarrhea, 4-hour erection, blindness. And you know, if that happens, just no big deal. But, and so that's one, it's truly uninformed consent, but it's a system interested in its own interest. There's a great documentary called Pink Ribbons. You could check out that documentary just about the cancer industry in particular. The cover is a giant stack of $100 bills wrapped in pink ribbons. So appreciate that there's a model that's protecting its own interests when it comes to what stories they will tell you. And they're going to do their darndest to find the one outlier story of the person who tried the alternative route and it didn't work out. And they're not going to tell you the stories of all the people who did go the alternative route and it worked out great for them. And they got to skip the hair loss and they got to skip the puking and they got to skip all of the chemical, which is what chemo means. They got to skip the chemical therapy and go take ownership of their health and approach it holistically. And the alternative world is not guiltless in this. They're going to also, the outlier stories of the fastest, most rapid transformations and jaw-dropping pictures are, that's what anybody's going to use in marketing. We're not going to tell you that. For most people, this is going to take a while. It's going to take some patience and endurance. Like, nobody wants to hear that. But once we can calibrate to, what does healing look like? Okay, it's I can't win the argument that I can poison my way back to health. So that means, what things can I do that build health? Then here's another. There's no silver bullet when it comes to healing. There's no silver bullet when it comes to treatment either. But when it comes to healing, your health is not about one thing. All I needed to do was sleep and I got my health. All I needed to do was drink this particular water. All I needed to do was eat this one vitamin. It's not that. It's many things. It's hydration and nutrition. It's mind and emotions. It is exercise and movement, it's sleep and rest and play and meaningful connection with other people, restorative disciplines that boost the body's ability to heal, and it's managing stress. That's how healing happens, and you can't get that in a brown bottle with a white lid. It's not how health works. We'd love it if it would be that way, but it just isn't. But we've been hoodwinked into thinking that it is, and healing requires ownership, whereas treatment just requires passivity and rule following and pill swallowing. And as long as you're willing to be a compliant rule follower, they're happy to treat you indefinitely the rest of your life and not tell you the stories of where that goes and why it doesn't work out. And they'll just highlight anything to scare you back into their model. That's the system we live in. And there are so many. That's the world I've swam in for the last 20 years, is all the different ways the body can heal and the dramatic stories of reversing almost any health condition you can think of, because the body is the healer, not the intervention. Once that clicks and you're willing to explore what would it take to heal, how do I evaluate the merits of medicine, what we call conventional, on its own terms, and then compare it honestly to other options? And you just kind of, which suffering do you want to choose? Discipline or toxicity? Like, you're going to have, either one can be hard, but what kind of life do you want to sign up for becomes part of the conversation, hopefully.
Am I right saying that chemotherapy is a chemical weapon? Is it mustard gas or something? It's some sort of chemical weapon that's used in a controlled way, as you say, to kill cells in your body.
Chemotherapy means chemistry, it's chemical. And essentially what chemotherapy is it's chemical therapy and it's a poison that the idea is we're going to target this as best we can and poison the cancer cells, poison the part of the body that we don't want to be growing and know it's going to do some collateral damage and poison other cells. That's why you have all these gross side effects because everything's poisoned. But the hope is that we poison enough of the bad cells that the body can then get back in front of it and kind of reassert itself and maintain health. And that's, I mean, they can do surgical, like you can get around the perimeter and inject particular parts and try to target it right at a tumor. But here's the problem. You puncture into the body, into the tumor. What happens when you pull the needle out? There's a vacuum and you just pulled what, if the cells are already metastasizing, you've just littered them into the rest of the interstitial fluid, circulatory system, and lymphatic system. And now you've spread that, hoping that you're just playing the odds that you can kill more than you harm and hope it works. That's chemotherapy. It's chemical therapy. And if you want other options, if you want to place your bets on the body healing, then it just requires, if there's a learning curve and there's experimenting. There's no one thing that works for everyone, but there are things that work really well. And it's finding how you use them in your situation. And that is just, it's not a conversation medicine is interested in having. I happily stand toe-to-toe with any doctor and reason with them, but they often don't like what I have to say because I'm, in some ways, it's questioning their entire profession and the methodology behind it. And I will tell you, there are some great doctors out there who really do embrace this, and they know where their profession is kind of weaponized against the populace or where their limitations are. And they use their license to help people heal. There are great doctors out there, but I'd say they're more the exception than the rule. And if we're going to heal, we want to think about the puzzle differently and come from a what we call a healing paradigm, which places primacy on the body's ability to heal rather than on the intervention to do all the work.
You were saying just now about the US and New Zealand are the only two countries in the world that allow advertising of pharmaceuticals on mainstream television, et cetera. Is the American healthcare model and the way it's structured unique in the world? Because, you know, some things you're saying around the pharmaceutical industry don't resonate necessarily with me as a Brit, someone from the UK, because our model is NHS, it's all institutionalized in that way. No one can sell me drugs directly. I don't feel under pressure to consume medication. And I believe, although I could be wrong, that our doctors are not sold to in the same way at a GP level, maybe a national level, but they're not targeted at a local level to buy favorite drugs. I mean, is it a Netflix documentary about oxytocin? Was it the painkiller?
Sure. Yeah.
And the whole model around targets and selling and people were being persuaded to consume more of this medicine.
Yeah.
It's killing them. Yeah. I don't see that model here. Is that a difference between the pressure you're feeling in America and the US versus maybe a European model?
Yeah, I think that to me, it's the same system manifesting itself in two different ways. So one, you have a centralized conventional versus a theoretical idea that we can navigate conventional ourselves. And so, yes, there are key differences, but at the end of the day, it's still allopathic medicine that your health system is built on. Same thing in Canada. They have allopathy has won the day and claims the title conventional. And so now it's just standardized that these are the things that we do. And any doctor that wanders outside the protection of so-called standard of care can lose their license. They're not following what the system is set up to do. Then you've more or less created the system where what gets paid for is conventional. So we have more options to pivot and try unconventional things, but you don't have to sit through the barrage of all the advertising and attempting to woo us into a particular model of healthcare. We just have the largest advertisers on all mainstream media, 50 to 70% of their advertising revenue, more in an election year, comes from pharmaceutical companies. So they get to dictate content. They get to dictate culture. And that is part of what we swim in here. But in the UK and Canada, you guys have, you've skipped ahead of us and you've just made that model standard for everyone. And now you just pay for it with your tax dollars. You now pay for people to tell you this is the only way. And so there's upside and downside to both, where you theoretically all the services you get are covered, yet that's like us subsidizing the crappiest food that you could possibly eat is one of the things we do here. And we've made garbage food-like products subsidized so heavily that they're the least expensive for the consumer. Well, that was a plan. And so now we're eating the worst food and paying for it with our tax dollars. You're getting the worst healthcare in some ways and paying for it with your tax dollars. And it's okay, it's free, but you already paid for it. And it's the only option typically that you're going to be presented is this one model. And so in some ways, it may be harder to break out of that. Our insurance world here is set up to cover pretty much everything medical, allopathic, and rarely covers all the alternative stuff. And that's my wife and I, my family, and most of the people that I'm friends with are in our alternative circles. We're just used to paying out of pocket for any healthcare we actually need. But here's the fun part. We hardly ever have to go to the doctor. My health insurance is my food. My health insurance are my habits. My health insurance is what I know about health. My kids have never been to the doctor maybe the last 10 years. Longer than that. Unless there's some sort of emergency, they need stitches or whatever. We have no use for that system. So our tax dollars don't have to go to that, which is the beauty of it. I'm not paying for a system I don't use. And in your world, you do, whether you use it or not, but you're still in the, here's all the medications they're going to give you. Did they tell you about chiropractic and acupuncture and 40 other holistic disciplines I could mention? No, probably not. And it's a shame that that's how the system's set up to work. It's just keep people in this cycle on this treadmill of regular visits, regular tests, regular medications, and we'll see you in 6 months and we'll do another test and tell you which medication to take. Is that healthcare?
I think the other challenge maybe in the UK, just giving a perspective that's coming into my head, is that I go and see my GP and it's covered, it's free, don't pay extra for that. And he's got a hospital, it's covered, it's free, whatever it may be, don't need to pay extra for that. If I go homeopathic, alternative, that's on the clock, isn't it? I'm paying. Suddenly I've got to fork out for something that I consider is free. Even going to a homeopathic outlet for medicine and pill and vitamins or whatever I'm going to buy, I have to pay for that. With my prescriptions, I get a fixed price. I've got a prepayment card. All my prescriptions are covered. If I've got certain health conditions or certain age, they're all free. So suddenly I've got to start paying for something that I consider to be a free right in my society. That's a barrier as well, isn't it?
It is. Well, let me give you another historical window into what you're talking about. So there was an era in the late 1800s, first half of the 20th century, so early 1900s, in this country where we had a very, very robust set of what you could loosely call mutual aid societies, where it's largely immigrant focused. So people with a particular plight, shared values, they'd come to this country and they needed a safety net. They needed some sort of place to land and build a life. And so naturally, in this free market, they set up mutual aid societies, which some of them grew, there were thousands of them. Some of them grew to hundreds of thousands of members. And you would pay a day's wage to get a year's worth of benefit. And that would cover life insurance. That would cover doctors. That would cover gymnasiums. They built roads. They built schools. All sorts of perks of just being part of this society. And what that did, because there were thousands of them and because people weren't dependent on the dole, they didn't rely on the government largesse to meet their need, they were a threat to monopolists. And so what monopolists did was basically legislate and infiltrate those and force them out of existence and start making the government cover things just like what you're talking about. So that why would I continue to pay this membership to this mutual aid society when the government's already covering that for me? I can, to your point, go see my doctor or I can pay out of pocket for a homeopath. Well, why would I pay money when I have a doctor now? That was intentional. And that system is set up to keep you thinking the same way or feeling the same way or feeling the hit in your wallet so that you don't explore health and they can keep you on that very profitable treadmill indefinitely. So that there's a concerted effort, whichever model you're talking about, to make sure things are centralized and that you follow in no one way.
I'm just thinking, if I was diagnosed tomorrow with something serious, something significant, something life challenging, I would be under an enormous emotional family pressure to follow the conventional.
Yeah, you would. Most likely.
I would feel obliged mentally in my own head to go conventional, because at what point do I want to put my chips on the table and go all in on something that is alternative when everything is telling me conventional is the way? It is only when conventional gets exhausted and it no longer delivers anything that I'd feel comfortable going alternative. But I wouldn't go alternative to start with, because the bias in my head says I'd be crazy because of everything I've been told. How do I break out of that?
Well, you recognize that you're in a trance, for one, and that simplicity that one is treatment and override the body's abilities and nudge it to work particular ways, which always has side effects. That's statins, proton pump inhibitors, like we talked about. Chemotherapy is no different. Go just look up the stats of the success rate. It's like 2% maybe that you get benefit compared to not doing anything. They're not going to tell you that when you go look at it. So some of it is there's due diligence and research on your own part to get confidence and fortitude, the backbone to try another way and pick your battles. You don't have to tell everyone that you're trying other things. And even if you stick with so-called conventional, why does that preclude you from trying other things to boost your body's ability to heal too? Like it's not one or the other. It could be both if you are committed to or just scared into conventional. But there are so many ways to heal. And when you get the advice of one model, guess what they're going to tell you is the option? When you go to an orthopedic, what are they probably going to prescribe? Surgery. When you go to an oncologist, what are they going to tell you? Oncology methods. You're not going to hear the other things outside their purview or their financial interests. So some of it is the way you could entertain the idea is you're going to have to become more educated and confident in what you know or what you've learned so that you can see your options with more informed consent and more breadth. And you probably don't win the argument that water is irrelevant to your health and that better food will be better for you and that exercise is going to help and that you don't need to sleep and you're the only person on the world who can't benefit from stress management. Like all of those things will help you. And done well, they can help you dramatically. And so, yes, it's an anxiety-inducing moment to hear that you may have some condition. What the medical world, to give them some credit, can do well is trauma and emergency care. Fantastic at that. If I get hit by a bus or tear my ACL, please take me to a medical doctor. But if I have a chronic condition, and now I'm really suspect of whatever they're going to tell me, their testing can be sometimes insightful. Like, we can see this thing on a scan. Never mind, maybe we traumatized your body with contrast dye or pressure or radiation in order to find that. So we put an extra burden on you in order to identify it. But the testing can reveal some things, but what often goes with testing is anxiousness, fear, and this is the only way. This is the approved treatment. So because you have X, now Y, rather than because you have this, here's a whole smorgasbord of options, and here's what it takes to rebuild a healthy lifestyle. That's just not in their financial interest or education to do that.
Yeah, as you said now, I'm just thinking about, you know, when you say investigation for chronic, it's quite traumatic, quite stressful. You know, I've climbed into an MRI machine many times and CT scanners and X-rays and things. All those are pretty traumatic experiences.
Emotionally.
I can have a metal tube for an hour.
Yeah.
Pushing
the
button.
Did they do a contrast dye for you? Did you ever have that?
I've had a contrast dye. I've had a swallower.
Barium?
Barium swallow, yeah, with a marshmallow and they chew it and they...
Yeah.
Then
okay, great.
Use the X-ray on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Gadolinium is the contrast dye, and that's a heavy metal that's toxic. And barium is radioactive material.
That's how it glows.
Because it's easier to see that on their scan. Did they tell you that this is a toxic metal or that barium is radioactive?
I knew that. I didn't ask because I knew. That's how the X-ray works. It measures radiation.
I got to put radiation in me to get healthier. I got to swallow a toxic heavy metal in order to boost my health and find out how to heal. Maybe.
But in the MRI, they ejected, another indicator into my, and you could feel it in your groin. It feels like you're wetting yourself. Yeah. So all of that.
That's the system. And when you choose to engage in the system, you can't be angry that you get what the system will offer you. That's all they're going to offer. And if there is a different path you could go, then it's on you to find it. It's because they're not going to, here's all the side effects, and this is why it might not be good for you, and here's some other ways you can heal, and you go to a chiropractor and ask them to promote that, they're not going to do it. Go to a medical doctor and ask them to promote chiropractor, they're probably not going to do that either. But both can be, there's some merit somewhere in there, and it's on you to find it, and to recognize the risks and the downstream effects of some of the things they're telling you to do. Once you see that, you can't unsee it, and then it's personal responsibility and choice and so on and so forth that gets in the mix of how you choose your healing path.
Yeah, I know enough people who have used complementary alternative medicine, however you want to describe it. My mum, for example, she was developing arthritis in her fingers and other joints, and she became a pescatarian. So she effectively abandoned meat, red meat, white meat, whatever. And she eats a lot of fish, oily fish, and I'm not saying she hasn't gone into, she hasn't reversed the effects of the arthritis she had, but she's certainly now able to live more comfortably. And I and my mum also, we only drink decaf coffee now because I realized what caffeine was doing to me. I've abandoned alcohol. And I think I mentioned to you in the green room that I'm on weight loss medication, which may not be complementary alternative, but I was 6-7 stone overweight. I need to get this off. And then I can start looking at my health in the future. Because a lot of things, I think what's going on in my body at nearly 60 years old is as a result of being significantly overweight for most of my life and having a toxic relationship with alcohol. So taking some of that out of my body and some of the slimming products is basically sludge. Low-fat food is basically sludge, isn't it?
They have chemical sludge. You take out fat and you have to satiate the body with something else. And so they just put in fillers and starches and things to try to replicate the enjoyment we get out of fat. I would tell you confidently, fat is not your enemy if you're getting good fat. If you're getting vegetable oils or seed oils, trans fats, that's rotting you from the inside. But good coconut oil, olive oil, animal fats, butter, cheese, those are great fats. And I would also argue good fats from red meat and healthy, pasture-raised chickens and so on is also great. But yeah, nutrition is another long conversation perhaps. But that is, you can, the more you clean up and reduce things like you talked about, you take away some of the crummy foods, you take away the alcohol, you get rid of some of the toxins that are just mucking up your insides, of course your body's going to feel better. Of course you're going to lose weight because you're getting at the source of the problem. And toxins are stored in fat cells. So if you're overweight, guess what? You have a toxicity problem. And that's how you get rid of the toxins. Sure enough, you lose weight. It's weird. But your body, you can reduce your calories really low, but if you're still toxic, the body can't let them out because it can't get them to the exit. So reducing your calories.
Make sure the calories you are consuming are good calories.
Correct.
They're nutritious calories.
Yeah, you're not infected with parasites that are eating all your food for you. That's another conversation. So there are things that prevent good habits from bearing the fruit they can. Then once you get your head around the basics, it's so much easier to heal.
But everything you said, I'm buying into it. I'm not saying I need to persuade you, but I've already worked out in my own head that, as you say, chronic conditions, doctors can't fix chronic conditions. They basically said, well, you're going to have to live with it. You're going to have to sort of deal with it. You know, there's no pill, there's no medicine. It just is. Yeah. As you say, if I'm in A&E, I've had trauma, I've got something really seriously broken, it's life-threatening. Yeah, you're right. They fix it. Chronic, a scratch of the heads, they're prodding, they say, try this, try that, see what happens. But how do we take everything you're saying and rebrand alternative or complementary in the mainstream and push against the tide of the pharma industry, the medical model, all the things you've been talking about? How do we create that change in people's minds?
I don't know a better way than education. And it occurred to me many years ago that fighting the systems, probably it's like punching the wind. I can be mad at it, or I can just go to work and try to build a better model. And so that's really what I've been about. And the way that we choke out this, let's just say, destructive way of approaching health is just not spend our money on it and not spend our time on it. We feed it by going to it. Well, what if we stop? Like, if everyone stopped using your public health system, the doctors would go out of business. There's nobody to treat. And so I don't think we're going to get there tomorrow. But as more of us just say, I opt out, I'm not going to participate in this system, it loses its life force. So I think we just demonstrate a better model by saying, I'm going to take ownership of my health. I can't make sense of poison my way back to health. So let me just level up my food, and my habits, and my inputs. And sure enough, that's where health is found, and it's very attractive because it's life-giving and it feels good, and it's, you get back in control of your own mood and your own energy and your temperature and all the other things that have been taken from you by continuing to participate in that system. So the short answers are educate yourself and opt out. That is, you can't necessarily in your system opt out of paying the taxes that for a system you're no longer going to use, but what you can do is just, oh, well, that's the system I'm in. Almost like a write-off. Like, well, at least I don't have to engage it. And we did that with public school system. Like, I just can't envision sending my kid to institutionalized education. That doesn't meet the needs of my kids. They're individuals, not lemmings. And they have the most robust social life of any kids I know. And they're the most well-adjusted kids I know because, oh, well, we pay taxes to that keeps that system going, but that doesn't mean I have to participate. So same thing with healthcare. educate yourself and opt out. That's really how you do it.
And it's been an absolutely fascinating conversation for the last hour and a bit before in the green room. And I'd love to catch up with you and talk about the dietary side as well as the pharmaceutical side at some point in the future. So how can people get hold of you? I'm sure people are really keen to read more about your work and your programs and things.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words, and I'd be honored. So a couple of easiest places to get a hold of me. So I do have a blog and a podcast called Deconstructing Conventional. So I've given my best pearls and I continue to learn and I'll continue to pump out shows. But if you want to go deeper into nutrition and so many other topics, I have podcast episodes on many of these things and some fascinating interviews as well. It's called Deconstructing Conventional because it started with the idea of like, can we deconstruct how we came to call this model of healthcare conventional? So episode 2 just lays out some of the history of that. So you could check out the show on pretty much anywhere you find podcasts, Deconstructing Conventional. And I also have the collaboration I'm a part of right now is called Healing United, which is myself and other doctors and coaches who really look at health holistically. We're building the model to replace, we're the rebel renaissance, if you will, to replace that just by saying, you guys get to pick. We think this works better. And so our main focus is on two things. It's purifying the body and nourishing it. It's on taking out the toxic load and nourishing the body back to health. So you can find out more about that in our detox programs at healingunited.today. Instead of .com, we picked .today. Just we want a sense of urgency. Let's get on with it already. There's a better way to do this. So healingunited.today, you can request a consultation or you can just enjoy some of our free content and find the podcast there as well.
Awesome. I'll put all of those details in the show notes below. So yeah, it's fascinating. So Christian, thank you.
Thank you. It's been great being here.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. If today's discussion struck a chord, consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.